from the studios at Boise State Public Radio. I'm Gemma Gaudette. You're listening to Idaho Matters. The Washington Post is reporting that more vaccinated people, often the elderly or immunocompromised, are dying of COVID-19. Now, throughout the pandemic, the majority of deaths in the United States came from people who did not get vaccinated. But the Post says 42% of people who died of COVID in January and February were vaccinated. So we wanted to ask Dr. David Pate, former CEO of St. Luke's Health System and a current member of the Idaho Coronavirus Task Force, why this is happening and to talk about other COVID news along with taking your questions. So if you have a question for us, send them in, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. Dr. Pate, good to have you with us.
Thanks, Gemma.
So can we talk about this article from the Washington Post? Why are more vaccinated people dying, at least in January and February of this year?
Yeah, it's a multiple number of factors. Just to be clear for listeners, your chances of dying unvaccinated are still much greater than those that are vaccinated. But to your point, Gemma, what we have seen is this higher percentage than usual of particularly the elderly, particularly those over 70 who have been vaccinated. But when you look at them closely, what you find is that most of them are what the CDC calls, and I think it's a misnomer, quote unquote, fully vaccinated. But fully vaccinated just means having had the primary series. When you look at boosters, then their death rate falls dramatically. And so, and I'll give you some numbers here in a second, but, you know, here's the point. In the first part of 2021, getting your full series was fine. Since late 21 and certainly now in 22, with the emergence of much more transmissible variants that have greater degrees of what we've talked about before, immune escape, ability to kind of get around either infection-acquired immunity or vaccine-acquired immunity, what we are seeing is more people getting infected that did not get boosted because the response from just the primary series, while it helps, it's just not enough. So here's some numbers. And, you know, first of all, one of the common myths I hear is, well, why bother get infected because, I'm sorry, why get vaccinated because you can still get infected. Even if you just get that full series and not boosted, you're just shy of three times less likely to be infected. If you get the booster, you're 3.5 times less likely to get infected. If you just get the full series, the first two shots, but don't get the booster, you have seven to nine times less chance of dying than someone that's unvaccinated. But if you get the booster, you're 21 times less likely to die. So the points are, it's still important to get vaccinated. It's even more important now with the state of this virus to get boosted. And so if you get the full series, you are going to be less likely to have a bad outcome than somebody's unvaccinated. But if you will get boosted, you'll have even a better chance. And this is particularly important in our elderly that already the normal state of affairs is that they will have less healthy immune systems, and they typically have many other medical risk factors. And so it's especially important in that group.
And Dr. Pate, can we talk about the immunocompromised? Because this group of people as well, even when vaccinated, have been at higher risk. So first, can you give us a couple of examples of someone who falls into this category? Because I am sure that everyone knows someone who is immunocompromised, but you may not know that they are.
Absolutely. And that's really the thing. And Gemma, we've talked about this on your show before, that, you know, immunocompromised people don't walk around with some kind of label on their forehead or their shirt that tells you that they're immunocompromised. Many of these people are trying to live their normal lives as well, but they're in grave danger with COVID. And in fact, we're even at danger if they get infected, because these are the people who are less able to clear the virus, meaning the virus can continue on in their body. And even if it doesn't kill them, then it can continue on and it can mutate in them. In fact, we wonder if even the first Omicron might have come from somebody who is immunocompromised that was giving this virus a great learning opportunity of how to get around the human immune system by being in someone that was immunocompromised. So we should all want to protect the immunocompromised. But as examples, Gemma, I think of these folks in two categories. There are the immunodeficient. So these are people that have either a congenital or genetic problem with your immune systems. These, most people don't know about these, but there's millions of people with them. And so, for example, I have a family member who does not make antibodies and has a defect in one of her types of T cells. So an infection in her, again, it would be likely to either to kill her or to continue on and just not get cleared from her body. So even though she's highly functional and has been working as a professional, and probably very few people other than who she's told would know that she has an immunodeficiency, because she seems to be doing all the things that we do, she's at tremendous risk. And so that's the first category, immunodeficiencies. The other group is the group that I refer to as people that are either immunocompromised because of a disease they have, or they're immunocompromised because of a medication they're getting to treat a disease they have. So one of the most common diseases that causes immunocompromise are cancers, and even more so cancers that involve our blood system. So people with lymphoma, leukemia, they're going to be particularly at risk. Also, when you're undergoing chemotherapy for cancer, that chemotherapy is done to with most often with the intent of clearing that cancer, but it also weakens your immune system. And so these folks are very high at risk of getting infected. Another group of people that this happens to is people that get organ transplants. And again, you may have no idea that they've been transplanted, kidney, liver, heart, it may be any number of things. But in order to keep their body from rejecting that organ, they have to be on medication that suppresses their immune system. And so that's good for their transplanted organ, but that's bad if they get exposed to this. So, you know, the problem is with that group is we've got some prophylactics for them. We have the Evusheld, which is a antibody treatment that we give them. We also have, we recommend 4 doses of vaccine for them, but understand, because of their weakened immune system, even when we give them the 4 vaccines, they typically won't have the kind of protection that you or I get from our full series and the booster. So these folks are going to continue to be at risk, even though they're doing everything they can to protect themselves.
And Dr. Pate, it seems to me, and correct me if I'm wrong on this assumption, because it's kind of elementary, but when we took masks away, pretty much, you know, no one's wearing them anymore. We put people who are immunocompromised, the elderly, children who were 5 and under who cannot be vaccinated, more at risk because we've chosen to no longer mask. And could that also be playing a part in why the Washington Post is reporting that we're seeing more vaccinated people die from COVID because it is the immunocompromised, it is the elderly?
Well, you've hit the nail on the head, Gemma. You know, keep in mind that this aged group, those over 70 particularly, which are the ones that we're seeing particularly most infected, these days, many 70 and 80 year olds are still very, very active. They still need to go to the grocery store. They still like to get their hair done. And many of these are grandparents. And so what has happened is that by saying that, you know, we don't want to take any precautions, we don't want anybody to be inconvenienced by, you know, wearing a mask or taking any of these other precautions, we want to get on with life and we want to quote unquote live with it. That means we will be interacting with that virus, and those people that interact with it then can bring it home to these grandparents. You know, we still like to get our families together for holidays and for visitations, and these are going to be risks. And we have decided as a society, in my regard, from a physician standpoint, I think it's kind of sad, but we've decided that, you know, it's almost kind of a Darwinian kind of thing, this, you know, survival of the fittest. And you know, if you're older, if you have an underlying immunocompromise, well, good luck, you're on your own. But the rest of us, we got to get on with our lives. And so, I mean, certainly arguments could be made on both sides. But as a physician, I find it very sad and troubling, because these other people have a right to get on with their lives too. And there is a way for them to do that in a much safer environment.
Right. We have selfishly decided who is worthy of protecting and who is not. That's what it seems like.
Exactly.
Who is disposable and who is not. Yeah. So Dr. Pate, back on April 18th, a judge ordered that the transportation mask mandate to be unlawful, ruled that the mask mandate went away federally when it comes to airplanes, trains, and airports. Yesterday, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recommended that travelers continue to wear masks in airplanes, in trains, in airports, despite this ruling. The Justice Department last month filed notice that it will appeal the ruling, and they have until April 31st to do so. Can we talk a little bit about this? I know when this ruling first came down, we discussed it on the program, but now with the CDC coming out with this recommendation, and we are seeing spikes around the country, it seems, Dr. Pate, in particular, what we just discussed with immunocompromised people, with the elderly, with people who are under the age of 5 who cannot mask, that this is common sense.
Well, precisely right. And this is why quite a number of us, you know, just kind of shake our heads at the CDC. I wish they would be more clear and that they would provide explanation to the public to help them understand. So just to your point, if you go back to, you know, right before all this happened with changing that mask requirement with the legal case and with the CDC changing its position. So airlines CEOs and their representatives were saying, look, why are you requiring masks on airplanes when they're not required in restaurants and bars? And I and the CDC should have responded to that, in my view. And the reason is why you would do that differently is immunocompromised people and parents of children under 5 can choose not to go to a bar. And they can choose to order their food from a restaurant, to take home, to sit outside and eat, whatever. But But it completely misses the point that there are, and I talk to parents all the time, that have to fly their children to, you know, especially here from Idaho, they may have to take them to Seattle or Oregon or Utah to get advanced care that's not available here. They have no choice. They have to put those kids on an airplane and they already have a medical condition and they can't be vaccinated. And now this is what they're faced with. And take the immunocompromised people. There are people that are still trying to work that are immunocompromised. They may have to travel for business. They may need to travel for care. And this just completely throws them under the bus. And so, yeah, I think it's disappointing. And I just wish the CDC would just be more clear. You know, what they did is they, before this legal case, they extended their mask requirement till I think it was early May. It might have been right about now. And, but I couldn't find any explanation. Okay, so what's magical about now? And the CDC has known we're seeing this uptick in cases, that we've got new variants here. So why even set public expectations like that? I don't know. It's very boggling to me to consider why they aren't doing a better job communicating all this.
So even though it is no longer required, you know, summer break is coming up. There are going to be more people traveling. If you are, let's say, you know, your family is getting on a plane next month, you may be the only people wearing a mask in the airport, wearing a mask on that airplane. Is there still protection for yourself in doing that, Dr. Pate?
Yes, there is. There's significant protection. Obviously, my preference is to stop the virus at its source. So I would prefer that everybody be wearing them, especially because you can be, as we've talked about for 2 years, you can be spreading this virus and not even realize that you're sick. Jimmy, you're reminding me of another point about why travel is very different than what the airlines used as their analogy of restaurants and bars. If you and I decide to go to lunch here in Boise, we know that 90%+ of the people in that restaurant are going to be from Boise. And so we know what the level of transmission is here. We know what the variants are here, et cetera. If you get on an airplane, the chances that there's anywhere near that percentage of people from your same area are tremendously diminished. You're going to be mixing with people from different parts of the country, different parts maybe of the world, with different levels of transmission, different variants. And so, again, it's a higher risk situation. Now, I want to be clear. I think that airlines do a great job with air ventilation, air circulation, and air filtration when you're at cruising altitude. I do not think they do a good job when those planes are at the gate. And so, you know, the most dangerous times getting on that plane or getting on and getting off the plane. And again, this would have been something nice for the CDC just to explain, even if you don't want to wear your mask during the flight, and of course you may be eating and drinking, that kind of stuff, at least let's have people wear those masks when boarding and when declining. But certainly you also want to wear it in the airport, because I can tell you that that air ventilation and filtration at the gate or during security is not anywhere near what it is on the airplane at cruising altitude.
Mm-hmm. I want to get to some questions from listeners. We've been talking, we've gotten emails in from people who have recently gotten COVID. They have been vaccinated. They've been boosted. In particular, one individual writes in, he's over the age of 80. He had a mild case about 3 weeks ago. His wife has now tested positive. He wants to know if he can be reinfected, even though they we're both, you know, fully vaccinated with the, you know, vaccine and booster.
So we have learned a lot about reinfections this year. And again, unfortunately, I don't see the CDC making the kind of effort to inform people the way that I think they need to. So what have we learned about reinfections? Well, first of all, reinfections, you know, they're said to be rare. I don't think they're rare. They certainly might be uncommon. I don't know. But the reason I don't know is that the studies we've done show that most of those reinfections occur within 60 days of the initial infection, certainly within 90. In the United States, the way we count reinfections is if you've had two PCR tests more than 90 days apart. Well, As we look at these studies, and you know, a big one from Belgium, there's been several of them, and they're all showing about the same thing. Frankly, very few of those reinfections occur after 90 days that we've seen. The times, so we're missing them. So we don't really know how common reinfections are because we're not counting them. The second thing is we do now realize you're highest risk for getting a reinfection is when we have a change in variants. In other words, if you get infected with Delta and we're still in the Delta surge, not a big chance you're going to get reinfected. But what we saw was people that got infected with Delta, big risk of getting a reinfection when Omicron came, because the protection's not going to be the same against different variants. So every time we get a new variant, those people who have previously been infected should be on guard. The second thing we've learned about reinfections is it was commonly said that all reinfections are going to be milder than the first case. We now know that's wrong. In fact, the first case of Omicron that was recognized in the United States was in a man in his early 50s in Texas who died from Omicron, and it was a reinfection. So what we have seen is that your highest risk of having something bad happen to you, having a worse reinfection, is if it's within that 60-day window. We also have a new study that just came out last week that now shows that there is, and it's a very complicated phenomenon, so it's going to be hard for me to explain it on the radio, but let me just say this. A lot of the people that were promoting disinformation about the vaccines were referring to something called antibody-mediated disease enhancement. In other words, if you got the vaccine and then you got infected, or even if you just got the vaccine, that you could have a severe case of COVID. Well, that's not panned out. That we haven't seen any evidence after hundreds of millions of vaccines. But we now have some evidence that this antibody-mediated disease enhancement, which means if you already have some of the pre-existing antibodies, can actually make you sicker, that does occur with infection. And really surprisingly, it doesn't happen if those antibodies are from the vaccine. It only happens if the antibodies are from prior infection. So this may be one of the reasons why you can get sicker if you get reinfected. So we're learning a lot about reinfections. I think we'll learn a lot more. But yes, the answer to his question, that was a long-winded answer. The answer is yes, he can be reinfected. And so he needs to take steps. I'll just say one last comment on this subject. I've heard people say, well, it's good to get infected because if I get infected, my immune protection will be stronger. That's not true. And I've also heard people say, if I get infected, it will help build my immune system. We're seeing more and more evidence lately that it does not strengthen your immune system. And in some people, it may hurt your immune system. So I think a careless or cavalier attitude about getting infected is probably not wise. And for God's sakes, don't try to get infected to get immunity. Mm. Please just go get the vaccine.
So, Dr. Pate, with this individual, because he's over the age of 80, he was infected 3 weeks ago, and now his wife has tested positive. I mean, should they try to stay away from each other while she's positive? Because I think this is partly also where we see reinfections, right? Is they happen right within your own home.
Yeah, they. Although being this close in proximity to each other, it's probably the most likely that one of them infected the other, and therefore it would be the same variant, statistically speaking. I mean, I can't say that with a surety, but overwhelmingly, it would be likely be the same variant, and therefore. There really shouldn't be, you know, once you transmit it to the one family member, we haven't really seen cases where the other family member is now reinfecting the other person. So I don't think there's a concern there between the husband and wife, but I think the concern for them, and especially at their age, is they do need to be careful in the future about getting reinfected, and they should not take the attitude, oh, we've been infected, so we now have this Superman immunity. That's not likely true.
Dr. Pate, Ray wrote us. He says he's vaccinated, double boosted. He's 70 years old. He has a pre-existing condition of heart failure. He's going to South Africa and then Zambia in about 3 weeks. So here's his question for you. He wants to know about the antiviral drugs that you can take within 5 days of getting COVID. Can he take some of that with him on his trip? And if he cannot, do you know if he can find those drugs overseas?
So, let me express a different concern before I get to his actual question to make sure that he's considering this. You just mentioned that he's going to be going to South Africa. South Africa right now is starting to have a new surge of BA4 and BA5.
Right, there's two new variants, correct?
Yes, two new variants. And why I would be concerned, one, we don't know a lot about those variants and how much immune escape they have, but we are thinking that there's certainly a chance they have more immune escape. There are two mutations in those viruses, one that we know creates more immune escape, and another one that was in Delta, which caused more transmission. And of course, we saw some more severe disease with Delta. We're not seeing more severe disease yet, but it's really early, so it's hard to say. I would be a little concerned about him going to South Africa. I don't know what he's going to be doing there, who he's going to be around. But, you know, even in South Africa, the health experts there say essentially everyone has been infected in South Africa. And if, you know, a small percentage have had vaccines. But yet, even with that degree of people with supposedly with antibodies, they're starting to see a surge with this, which certainly suggests to me that vaccination or infection may not be protective. So I'd be very worried about him in addition to the fact that it may be harder to find high quality medical facilities and treatments than it is here in the United States. Now, as to his question about the antivirals, the one that would probably be the most useful, but we haven't tested it against BA4 and BA5. Again, we don't have any reason to believe it won't work, but I can't tell him it will. He's right. It does have to be started ideally within 3 days and certainly within 5 days of getting symptoms. And that's called Paxlovid. The problem with Paxlovid that he would need to talk to his doctor about, he mentioned that he's got heart failure. This drug does interact with quite a few other drugs and very possibly some medications that he's on for his heart failure. So I think if he plans to still go forward with this trip, better talk to your doctor and do it soon so that that kind of an evaluation can be made.
Maggie writes in, Dr. Pate. She is 67. She's fully vaccinated. She got her first booster at the end of October. She has no underlying conditions. She's very active. She's not had COVID. She wants to know when she should get her second booster. She writes, I'll be traveling back east in late July, So I was thinking of waiting until late June to get that second booster so I would have the strongest defense against the virus at that time. So is that what she should potentially do?
And what was her age, Gemma? Did you say 60?
She's 67.
67, okay. So in her age group is where we have the most evidence, even though it's still limited evidence, but we have the most evidence to support getting a second booster in her age group. The question is, what is going to happen with BA2? BA2.12.1, which is picking up right now. And you mentioned she's going to be going to the eastern part of the United States. That's where we even have more of the BA2.12.1. You know, it's a little bit of this. It's kind of like when you try to time the stock market, you know, right. Very few people time it exactly right. And I understand what she's thinking. Depending on when that planned trip is, I think we're going to have another vaccine, a different kind of vaccine available this fall. What I would recommend to her, given her age, is that she get her second booster now. That's not an official recommendation, by the way. That's not from the FDA or CDC, but that's what I would do because it is permitted. The FDA has said you can. They just haven't made that a recommendation. If I was her, I'd get the second one now because I would count on there's going to be another vaccine coming in the fall. And if we are going to have a surge and we're already having a slight uptick already, that could be indicative that we're going to get it, and she plans to travel. I'd want her protected in the short term, and then I think we'll have time to get her the new kind of booster come this fall before she makes her travel.
So I also want to end on some news that came out, Dr. Pate, after we spoke on last week's program, and this is about vaccines for those five and under. Last Thursday, Moderna came out saying that they are seeking emergency use authorization from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. This is for its COVID-19 vaccine for children 6 months through 5 years of age. Dr. Pate, this is a long time in coming.
Well, it sure is, Jim. And we talked about it last week and about some of the mutual frustration about this. And we talked about, you know, you and I had talked last year. I thought we were going to have vaccines for this age group in January or February of this year. What turned out happened was that Pfizer, who came out with data the earliest, had lowballed the dose. And that's understandable. You don't want to give kids any higher dose than you have to. And so they shot conservatively, but they probably shot a little too low. And so what we saw was they didn't have as robust a response, particularly the older of that age group didn't. And so they thought, well, we probably have to go to a third shot, which means that delayed getting the results. And so Pfizer's not anticipating having their results to go to the FDA, I think, until end of June. Moderna, on the other hand, looks like they hit it pretty close. And their data does look very good. And so I was frustrating with, okay, let's get on with it and let's get it approved. So I'm very pleased to hear that's going forward. We really need to get these kids vaccinated. You know, that older in that age group, they'll be going to kindergarten next year. Many of them are going to daycare. We may be having these new surges. We don't know. I just want to see those kids that want to get their parents want to get them protected. Let's get them protected.
And, you know, when we think about early parenthood, right? When it's our first child, it is hard enough to make that adjustment. And then to basically be locked down for the 2 years we've been locked down, my heart goes out to every parent who has had to go through that. So this is more than time. Dr. Pate, thank you so much for coming on the show and talking with us today. So always appreciate you and your time.
Thanks, Gemma.
Absolutely. We've been talking with Dr. David Pate. He is the former CEO of St. Luke's Health System and a current member of the Idaho Coronavirus Task Force. If you have a COVID-19 question, send us an email, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. Dr. Pate will be back with us next week and will be here to answer your questions. Up next, we will tell you how to spot a nasty new kind of mushroom here in the Treasure Valley.
Thank you.